Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Dave, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of Mount Sinai, the 12th Hour Liberty Rotation. Today is January 23, 2018, or the sheep at 7, 2021. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Trust and Obey. When we walk with the young in the light of His word, for the glory He sets on our way, while we do His good will, He abides with us still, and with all who will trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yahshua but to trust and obey. Not a shadow can arise, not a cloud in the sky, but a smile quickly drives it away. Not a doubt nor a fear, not a sigh nor a tear, and above all we trust and obey. Trust and obey, for the small other way, to be happy in Yahshua, but to trust and obey. Not a burden we bear, not a sorrow we share, but a toil He doth richly repay. Not a grief nor a loss, not a frown nor a crown, but is blessed if we trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yahshua but to trust and obey. But we never can prove the delights of His love until on the altar we lay. For the favor He shows and the joy He bestows are for them who will trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yahshua but to trust and obey. When in fellowship sweet, we will sit at His feet, for we walk by His side in the way. What He says we will do, where He sends we will go. Never fear, only trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yahshua but to trust and obey.
Man on the White Horse, Part 4, by Ben Roden. We're going to continue our study. We're on page 26. Righteousness of the Yahshua, judgment of the living. Okay, let's just see how much Ben Roden understood back in 1965 about the righteousness of Yahshua and the judgment of the living, seeing how they were still in the judgment of the dead. And so let's just see what all he knew about that at that time. And we'll get an insight of probably why he ended up his ministry failing, and so forth. It says, however, we're on page 26, however, under another symbolism, Yahshua showed that the one who has the keys to the door, Yahshua and his kingdom, is the porter. John 10, this same truth of the Yahshua's righteousness is taught by joining the two sticks, the two kingdoms of Israel, Ephraim, SDA, with the headquarters at the North Tacoma Park, D.C., and Judah, DSDA, with the headquarters in the South Texas, and showing anatypical David as his shepherd, he joins the two sticks and teaches Yahweh's people to walk in the Yahweh's judgment and to observe his statutes. David is Yahweh's servant, king and prince over his people forever. Okay, now I want to point out something here. Back in 65, according to Ben Roden, the Washington headquarters for the Seventh-day Adventist Church was in Washington, D.C., Tacoma Park, Washington, D.C. Now, why would the Adventists, of all places, their headquarters started out, I believe, in Michigan or Topeson, Maine, with Helen G. White, how did they end up being in Washington, D.C.? Washington, D.C. is not even a part of the United States. Washington, D.C. is an alien nation. It's a part of the Vatican from the old country. And it's called District of Columbia. How did the Seventh-day Adventist headquarters end up being in an alien nation in District of Columbia when it started out in the United States? But, as Ben Roden says here, the Seventh-day Adventist headquarters is at the north of Tacoma Park, Washington, D.C. And Judah, the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, with his headquarters in the south, here in Texas. Well, Texas is known to be an independent nation. It has never been a state. It never started out as a state, and it never will be a state of the Union. It's just a captive nation status right now. So, the headquarters for the tribe of Judah, the line of the tribe of Judah, Davidians, Shepherd Rod, is in another nation. Is in the nation of Texas. And the headquarters for the Seventh-day Adventist Church is in another nation. District of Columbia. And they're both in the geographical location of the Western Hemisphere here in the United States. They're land masses that are part of the collective other 49 states of the Union. Texas is supposed to make the 50th state, which that's the way they count it, but it's really officially, technically, it is not. It is a nation. Washington, D.C. is really not a nation, but it's a district, and that's when they call it District of Columbia, which headquarters is in Rome, Italy. So this is really a strange situation, to say the least. So let's go on. So it says, the kingdom of Yahweh and David the king. And David my servant shall be king over them, and they all shall have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes. and do them, and they shall dwell in the land that I have given unto Jacob my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelt, and they shall dwell therein, even they, and their children, and their children's children forever, and my servant David shall be their prince forever. Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them. It shall be an everlasting covenant with them. And I will place them and multiply them, and will set my sanctuary in the midst of them forevermore. My tabernacles also shall be with them. Yea, I will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And the heathen shall know that I, the Yahweh, do sanctify Israel, and my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore. Ezekiel 37:24-28. Even the heathen shall know that the Yahweh, or the Yahshua, actually this is the Son, sanctifies Israel when they are in His kingdom. And it's called the kingdom of Yahshua, the kingdom of His dear Son. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Yahshua shall know. Isaiah 62:2. Okay, now, what is that new name? Okay, well, Jacob got a name change from Jacob, meaning supplanter, deceiver. He got changed from that to a sacred name called Israel. Okay, so now, the land of Israel is one thing, but to have an individual, Yahweh change his name from whatever it is to Israel, that's quite an honor. We will not have this man. Okay, this is another subtitle. With this abundant knowledge of the most glorious truth of the righteousness of Yahshua in our midst. People still doubt and say by their actions, if not by their words, that they will not have this man. But his citizens hated him and sent a message after him saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. Luke 19:14. Yeshua is hated by his citizens because of his choice of the person he appoints to reign over them. Says the Yeshua's servants regarding this scripture, as they sent a message after him, saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. The only conclusion admissible is that shortly before his return, Yahshua shall inform his citizens that he has taken the reins in his own hand to set up his kingdom, and that they, upon hearing the announcement, shall refuse to submit themselves to the one through whom he is to rule. Observe that in the message which they sent after him, his servants did not say, we will not have you to reign over us, but rather, we will not have this man to reign over us. What they objected to was Yahshua reigning over them through someone else. Clearly then, before he is coronated and prior to his return to reckon with his servants, he appoints a man to reign over them in his stead, whereupon they say to him, by their attitude and stand toward his message, we will not have this man to reign over us, although this man, as we now see, is the antithetical David, the simple means, the visible king. And that's found in Track 8. Page 71, that's in Mount Zion at the 11th hour. Also, notwithstanding all of his citizens who hated him and who sent their messages showing their displeasure with the Yahshua because of the antithetical David he places over his flock, there will be many who shall take a hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, "We will go with you, for we have heard that Yahweh is with you." Zechariah 8:23. That is, the one who is a Jew represents Yahshua in the person of his saints. And Ben Roden says parentheses 144,000. Well, this is wrong. This is W-R-O-N-G. Ben Roden don't have the authority to say parentheses what this means. It's talking about one individual. It's not talking about 144,000 individuals representing one individual. And, but because they don't understand who this one person is, they say, well, we understand 144,000, so we'll just slip that in there and make people believe that this is actually talking about the 144,000. So I'm going to read that again. It says, notwithstanding all of his citizens who hate him and who send their messages showing their displeasure with the Yahshua, because of the antithetical David he places over his flock, there will be many who shall take a hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, "We will go with you, for we have heard the Yahweh is with you." Zechariah 8:23. That is, the one who is a Jew represents Yahshua and the person of his saints. Okay, so that is the one who is a Jew, represents Yahshua. Well, that should be all that should be said about it. And it should have said, instead of saying represent Yahshua and the person of his saints, it should say represent Yahshua and the person of himself. That would be accurate. That would be one singular person. And that would be this antithetical David. His skirt represents truth or the church as a whole, by which the 144,000 are symbolically clothed. Okay, his represents the truth or the church as a whole. Okay, this says, that's found in 2 Shepherd's Rod, page 281. And 2, Jesse the rod and branch. Plainly, therefore, the rod coming from the stem of Jesse is symbolical of David, and the branch coming from the rod is symbolical of the son of David, Yahshua. Upon this instant, branch and rod, the spirit of the Yahshua shall rest. That's found in Tract 8, page 46. Okay. Since therefore from the stem of Jesse came the rod, David, and from the rod sprang the branch, Yahshua, David the visible king, and Yahshua the invisible king of kings, shall in that day, what day? That's the day of his redeem. That's the day of his vengeance. That's the day of the beginning of the judgment of the living. And that day met its fulfillment in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. And that day was on the Day of Atonement, where it was finalized. In our time, constitute the ensign, and to it shall the Gentile seek in his rest, or his resting place, the location where the rod or ensign stands, the kingdom shall be glorious. Yea, I will make the place of my feet glorious. Isaiah 60:13, saith Yahshua. Tract 8, page 47. Whereas antipathically Ezekiel is depicted as the judge, at the same time Zechariah says he is Joshua, and the symbolism of joining the two sticks. Ezekiel calls Yahweh's servant David. Okay. Ezekiel calls Yahweh's servant David. In John, chapter 10, Yahshua says he is the porter who opens the door to the kingdom. So 2002 at Kermit, Texas, this porter, Elijah David, given that new name at the time too, opened the door to the kingdom by announcing that Yahweh is calling for a revival and reformation and a change of garments from filthy garments to clean white linen garments, and a change of attitude and a change of leadership. Okay, and this is Yahshua standing there invisibly at the door with his visible servant Elijah David, given this message to effect a revival, reformation, and a moving on out of spiritual Egypt, the bondage of sin, 2002 at Kermit, coming out of Egypt, starting the second exodus of Isaiah chapter 11. Where it says that there is to be a second exodus. This was the beginning of the second exodus out of spiritual bondage of Egypt. Okay. Who opens the door to the kingdom? Luke states he is the one left in charge of the work, and his citizens are so displeased with the one to the point where they hate the Yahshua for it, and send him a message saying, so, Malachi states that the one of the Yahshua puts in charge, with whom his citizens are displeased, is Elijah. Okay, Malachi 4, 4 and 6. Read Testimony of Ministers 475. Sister White says that she saw that Yahweh would send Elijah the prophet after her. Okay. Read Testimonies to Ministers 475. Joshua of old was chosen to lead Israel. Numbers 21:17. I got a typo here or something. Or it's Numbers 28:27. Or it's Numbers 28:17-23. Into the kingdom, unto the promised land, and to purify the camp, Joshua 7. So it is with the antipical Joshua. Okay, so this would be antipical David then, according to Ezekiel. All these are depicted as one and the same individual who brings the church the message of Yahshua's righteousness, the investigative judgment of the living, the message that judges the present-day church, Aholah and Aholabah, Seventh-day Adventist and Davidian Seventh-day Adventist. Yahshua says, he that rejecteth me and receiveth not my word hath one that judges him. The word that I have spoken, the same shall judge him in the last day. John 12:48. Samuel anoints David king, page 29, man on a white horse, then by the Ben Roden. David of old was anointed by Samuel to be king of Israel, while Saul was yet king. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren. And the Spirit of Yahweh came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. But the spirit of the Yahweh departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Yahweh troubled him. 1 Samuel 16:13-14. And typical David, Joshua, etc., is anointed, while antitypical Saul, SDA, General Conference Ruler of modern Israel, and his son Jonathan, DSDA, are yet living. You recall Jonathan ate honey against Saul's instructions to fast. He put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand, and dipped it in a honeycomb, and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Then Saul said to Jonathan, "Tell me what thou hast done."
Well, okay.
And Jonathan told him and said, "I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in mine hand, and lo, I must die." 1 Samuel 14:27-43. In Zechariah, chapters 3 and 6, Joshua is shown with the angel who is the Yahshua, the branch. Okay. Now it says, see, 1 TGR 8:24-27, and 5 Testimonies 4:67-476. At the same time, Jeremiah shows that the church that is called by Yahshua's new name, branch, she, Yahshua or righteousness, grows up under David, their judge, ruler. Read Jeremiah 23:5-6, 33:15-16. This is in the days for the salvation of Judah and Israel, the time in which they are saved, probationary time. The three divisions of the true church. Here it is plain to see that the three divisions of the Seventh-day Adventist Church are shown in typology, which explains and establishes the prophecy pertaining to them. It is necessary to obtain this information so that the elect will not be deceived by one of the three divisions of the false who claim to be the true. Through type and antitype, we have a sure way to prove who is the true remnant church. Saul, Jonathan, and David, and the antitype. Well, I can tell you right now, Saul was Verlus W. Johnson. And Jonathan was a son of Saul. So, if Rutherford Johnson was antitypical Saul, and which that's what he ended up being, then Jonathan would have to be his, would have to be Daniel, his son. Because Daniel also denounced the rod, just like his father did. And Jonathan died with his father in the type. So, Jonathan was cut off with his father in the antitype. And I represented David there in 2002-2003 at that cutting off of antitypical Saul and Jonathan. Although Saul was wroth with David and threatened his life, even pursuing after him to slay him, yet, when David found Saul asleep in a cave, he would not harm Saul, but cut off only the skirt of his robe, just a part of his covering, Read 1 Samuel 24:1-4. When David's men saw Saul sleeping, they reminded him of Yahweh's promise to deliver Saul into his hand. 1 Samuel 24:4. Nevertheless, David did not fall into the enemy's trap, but rather cut off Saul's skirt, even though afterwards David's conscience smote him with the realization that he had committed a discourtesy to the reigning king. Therefore, he apologized to Saul. However, the incident helped Saul to realize David's love and respect for him as his superior at the same time. Both men were conscious of the fact that David was to be king over Israel rather than Saul's posterity. And that's what alarmed Willis Johnson in 2002 when I gave him that message and told him, first thing I told him to do was repent, restore the daily, call a church meeting, and address his son Daniel as the first number one. But he was to fire Daniel from his position and fire his grandson, Daniel's son, fire him from his position in the church. In other words, that they were to be excommunicated from the congregation. Okay. Therefore, Saul had compassion on David as he saw. Genuineness of his character, or the result of this coincidence, was that the two men were made conscious of the close bond between them. David called him father, and Saul called David son. Now, isn't this ironic that Willis Johnson had his middle son, his name was David. Literally, it named him David. And that was the one that he put at the head of the church when David came back home. He put David at the head of everybody, given the highest position in the church, outside of himself. Okay, so it is in the closing work for the church, the general conference brethren, the antitype of Saul, realize that they will not be permitted to continue conducting Yahweh's work from Tacoma Park, Washington, D.C., in the time of the loud cry, since they cannot then buy or sell without receiving the mark of the beast, Revelation 13:17. But what would happen if you dissolve Washington, D.C., which is antitypical Babylon? And that's what Cyrus did in the type. He dissolved Babylon in one night. The Medes and the Persians came in and took Babylon and killed King Belshazzar and 1,000 of his lords, destroyed 1,000 of them. Cyrus joined Babylon then to the great nation of Israel. Instead of Babylon being isolated and remaining an independent Babylonian state, when Cyrus overthrew it, he joined Babylon then to the great land of Israel. Because Babylon is right there on the river Euphrates. It was on the north side of the river Euphrates. It is on the south side. That's where the palace was, right there, actually in the land of Israel. Because the river Euphrates was a borderline, Babylon straddled the Euphrates rivers, both north and south, partially in the land of Mesopotamia and partially in the land of Israel. Now you understand why Washington, D.C. came over here, the Vatican, and they took part of the state of Virginia and part of the state of Maryland, and they made the District of Columbia out of those two states of America, Maryland and Virginia. Virginia shortened means virgin, and Maryland shortened means Mary, so it means Virgin Mary. Washington, D.C. means Virgin Mary headquarters of the Catholic Church. Here is wisdom. Antipater Saul, the General Conference brethren, is well aware of the fact that his posterity, the General Conference, with an elected president at Tacoma Park, D.C., will not be the governing body for the church in the last day. In stating the Bible regarding this subject and making the application of the tithe and antitithe in this manner, they are made aware of the antithetical David's love for them and his great zeal and desire for their salvation and progress of the work of the message by the angel who joins the third angel's message as it swells to a loud cry. Read Revelation 14:18, 18:1-4, Testimonies of Ministers 59, 300, Early Writings 2:77. The truth established by type, symbol, and antitype. The whole symbol of the types and symbols was a compacted prophecy of the gospel, a presentation in which were bound up the promises of the redemption. Acts of Apostles, page 14. Thus through the patriarchs and prophets as well, as through types and symbols, Yahweh spoke to the world concerning the coming of a deliverer from sin. Thus, through types and symbols, he makes wise the simple and confounds the prudent by showing that where there is no type, there is no truth. 2 Shepherd's Rod, page 10 and 2. Again, we see there is a type for every event. Let none despise types, for where there is no type, there is no truth. 2 Shepherd's Rod, page 153. A close study of the type is the only possible way to clear the truth. 2 Shepherd's Rod, 266. Ancient Babylon became a type, and had it not been so, there would have been no modern Babylon, the antitype. Revelation 18:2. 2 Shepherd's Rod, page 268. See also Revelation 14:8. Now, if never before we should see that where there is a type, there is also an antitype, and that where there is no type, there is no truth. 1 Peter 4:7-15. When we consider the leadership of Yahweh's people, Israel, anciently, and make application to the Yeshua's leadership of the modern day Israel, SDA, we see that since the Philistines of old slew Jonathan, Saul's son, first, 1 Samuel 31:2-6, then we are made conscious of the fact that to be true to type, the antithetical Philistines must slay Jonathan, DSDA, Executive Council, before they slay Saul, the Seventh-day Adventist General Conference. With the enmity exerted by the evil influences, it can well be seen that there is an attempt to persuade Antipater David to use the advantage that the Yahweh gives him to slay Saul, 1 Samuel 24:4, first part. However, like David of old, the David of the day cuts off only the skirt of Saul's robe, while the angel of Laodicea used his own righteousness, so the angel of Laodicea then would be Brother Johnson. He uses his own righteousness with which to cover his feet. See 1 Samuel 24:4. Last part. In his Laodicea sleeping condition. See Revelation 3:13-19. Ishbosheth, Saul's son, a type. It was thought by many in Israel that since Ishbosheth was Saul's son, he should be the rightful heir to his father's throne. Read 2 Samuel 2. There were two brothers, Baana and Rechab, captains of bands who slew Ishbosheth. Later, David had his young men slay them, 2 Samuel 4:12. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it. In this act, David of old showed his loyalty to the king of Israel and his respect for Saul by avenging the blood of his son. There is a nobility of character shown in right actions, and the son of Jesse, although faulty, did show forth a dignity and certain qualities of moral excellence and his regard for the king's office. Isn't that strange? King Saul didn't have no regard for the sacred office that he held. But David had a high regard for it, and he respected King Saul for that high sacred office that he held. But Saul didn't even respect himself or the office of the king of Israel. He didn't respect that. Even though he was anointed, a special anointing by Yahweh through Samuel, made him king over Israel, the highest office in the world is to sit upon the kingdom of Israel. Okay. Revival and Reformation. During World War I, the General Conference failed to take a stand for conscientious objection or non-combatant service and Sabbath privileges, with a diet free from unclean meats for Seventh-day Adventist boys in Germany. They permitted and even encouraged the SDA young men to take up arms and fight. For proof that the spirit of the persecution was manifested by our former brethren, please notice the following document, which appeared in the Dresdener, Neuesten, Nachrichten, April 12, 1918. Adventist Ministry and Fatherland. At the beginning of the war, our denomination divided into two parts. While 98% of our membership took the position on Bible ground that it was their conscientious duty to defend the fatherland with weapons, and that also on the Sabbath, and this united position of the leaders was at once forwarded to the War Department, 2%, however, did not submit themselves to this united resolution, and therefore had to be disfellowshipped because of their unchristian conduct. So 2% of the Seventh-day Adventists were disfellowshipped because they didn't believe in defending their fatherland and on the Sabbath day as well. These unprofitable elements set themselves up as preachers, and with small results made propaganda for their foolish ideas. They call themselves falsely preachers and Adventists. They are not. They are deceivers. When such elements shall receive their merited punishment, we regard it, in fact, a favor done toward us. Our leaders have, up to this day, invested our surplus church money in war loans, in the fullest assurance that Germany, with Yahweh's help, would come through the struggle victorious. Everywhere our members are sharing the self-evident duty and giving into the hands of the fatherland the so much needed men. For the Adventist men are particularly all in the field, our army service, faithfully performing their duty and expect a just treatment as thanks from the fatherland also. The truth about the reform movement in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, pp. 10 and 11. Please note the above statement from the official German SDA publication, as quoted in The Truth About the Reform Movement in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. This says 98% took the stand that it was their duty to defend the fatherland, Germany, with arms. They call Germany, Adventists call Germany our fatherland. The refusal to take up arms and defend Germany, even on Yahweh's holy Sabbath day, was considered unchristian by all but 2% of the church's membership. Because the 2% stood firm for principle, they were disfellowshipped. If those who stood firm for their faith were killed, it was regarded by the rebellious majority as a service to them. Our leaders have invested church money, the tithe, etc., in war loans to arm Adventist young men in Germany to fight, disregarding even the Sabbath, and to kill Seventh-day Adventist boys from France, England, America, etc. Well, number one, first place, what were Adventists doing in the military to begin with? What were they doing taking up arms and fighting for a cause that they know not what? They think they're fighting to defend their homeland, when actually their homeland is the one that started the war against what they call their enemy. Okay. What greater deception can come upon the human mind than for men to think they have an exalted position before Yahweh, when in fact they incur His divine wrath by their wicked actions? I was shown that Yahweh's people, who are His peculiar treasure, cannot engage in this perplexing war, for it is opposed to every principle of their faith. Now here Ben Roden is condemning the Adventists for participating in this perplexing war, which Ellen G. White was against. Yet Ben Roden, whenever he became a head of the Shepherd Rod in 1960, he made every overture he could to go and meet with the General Conference president. And he did indeed meet with the president there in Washington, D.C. Ben Roden did. Him and his wife went up there and met with the local conference presidents and saying, we want to unite, we want to become united back with the Mother Church. We want to be a part of y'all again. And here, Ben Roden just wrote this thing here in 65, condemning the Adventists for their participation in the war, and yet he comes along here and says, I want to join back up with you all. Well, we're supposed to become one body again. What a double mind. What a twisted double mind. In the army, they cannot obey the truth, and at the same time obey the requirements of their officers. There would be a continual violation of conscience. Worldly men are governed by worldly principles. They can appreciate no other. 1 Testimonies 3:61. As a result of the wrong course taken by representatives of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists in Germany, the Reform movement Ishbosheth, an offspring of the Mother Church, was born. Saul and his posterity ruled in Israel for only a season. After David was anointed by Samuel to become king of Israel. For soon after David was anointed by Yahweh's prophet, the Philistines slew Jonathan, and Saul and two brothers arose in one combined effort and slew Ishbosheth as he lay on a bed at noon, 2 Samuel 4:5. Now, what's wrong with what I just read? Ben Roden is saying that Saul and his posterity ruled in Israel for only a season. A season would be 3 months. Okay? After David was anointed by Samuel. David was anointed by Samuel at the age of 17, and King Saul continued to be king for another 13 years. King Saul died 13 years later on the battlefield. That's longer than any season. So you see, when you don't know your facts, and you don't have inspiration, but you're trying to put forth a prophetic truth by inspiration, using these key figures of type and antitype, and yet just make a tongue-in-cheek statement, a season. What does the Bible say? That King Saul only ruled for one season after David was anointed. For soon after David was anointed by Yahweh's prophet, the Philistines slew Jonathan, 13 years later after David was anointed. And Saul and two brothers arose in one combined effort and slew Ishbosheth as he lay on a bed at noon, 2 Samuel 4:5. Captain of band, and making a right application of type and antitype, remember, it must be done in a correct manner in order to teach a present truth lesson. Unmasking error, making wise the simple, and confounding the so-called wise. We must realize that there is a key revealed by inspiration, with which to unlock the mysteries of heaven. Through the Spirit of Prophecy by Ellen G. White, inspiration reveals the key with which we are able to unlock the mystery of the identity of the true Israel of today. Yahweh's remnant, which keep the commandments of Yahweh, and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah, Revelation 12:17. Well, Ben Roden didn't do that, yet he claimed that he set up the ordained system of true worship, in which he made a stab at it. And he claimed that he was fulfilling all of this here, having the testimony of Yahshua and the spirit of prophecy, by keeping the commandments of Yahweh. He claimed to be doing all this. He went through the ritual of the outward show, like the Pharisees and the publicans and the Sanhedrin did, an outward show. That was all. And Brother Johnson followed in his footsteps, making an outward show and going through the motions and doing the same thing as Ben Roden did. Speaking of ancient Israel, Sister White states, we are repeating the history of that people. 5T160. They repeated clear on up to 2003, when Yahweh brought a close to the third feeding pastor Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, of the Seventh-day Adventists, when he brought a final close to those three feeding pastors, based in Carmel, Gilead. This is when the Sister White says we're repeating the history of that people. Indeed, we did. Speaking of ancient Israel, Sister White states, we are repeating the history of that people. Since we are repeating the history of Israel, it must be that our history compares with theirs. Thus, inspiration is our key, unlocks the mystery, and identifies the true remnant of Israel. It says, therefore, as a result of the combined efforts of two brothers in the type, Bana and Rechab, captains of bands who slew Ishbosheth, the son of Saul at Noon, we now have two brothers in the Anatite, who in one combined reform movement are zealously attempting to bring about a reform in the church. They figuratively slay the reform SDA church and a typical Ishbosheth while he is resting at noonday, while the light is shining from heaven. Here we see one coming up and the other going down. However, Antipical David commands his young men helpers to slay the two brothers, a non-prophetic reform movement, with the sword of the inspiration. So Brother Johnson said that Gilead Center had a reform movement, that he did anything but reform the church. Well, he wrote the laws and the bylaws, and he wrote the constitution and so forth for it. And he set up the sanctuary system by the ordained system of true worship of the creation calendar with true time. He did all of that, but he was not a prophetic reform movement. It was only the third feeding pastor of the third step of the genuine movement of the Seventh-day Adventists. So Brother Johnson, well, I've got a prophetic reform movement. No, it's a non-prophetic reform movement. That's when it came to its end, like it did. With the sword of inspiration, present truth. If the truth cannot save, it destroys. At this later 8 hour, the reform that has the living testimony of the spirit of prophecy consumes all non-inspired reform movements. So Ben Roden had a non-inspired reform movement. Brother Johnson had a non-inspired reform movement. V.T. Holliff had a non-inspired reform movement. See, the thing is, they had true messages, and they had true times. All right, V.T. Holliff, Ben Roden, and Brother Johnson, all three of them had three prophetic times appointed to them. But they mislabeled them, and they misapplied the application of what they were supposed to do. And so, therefore, they didn't fulfill anything that they prophesied that they were supposed to fulfill. That's why. This brings the close of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour corner, number 11. Click on our audio archives, hear this message and more. Let us close now with a song.
Long live the day. I was sinking deep in sin, far from the peace of the shore. Very deep the stand within, sinking to rise to hold forth. But the master of the sea heard my despairing cry. From the water lifted me, now say, come forth. Love lifted me, love. Happy house to have, love lifted me.
graciously, ever his pleasure sing. Thus so lively and so true, never's my soul the song. Faithful love in sinner still to him, these love's lifted me, love's lifted me. When nothing else can help, love's lifted me, love's lifted me, love's lifted me. When nothing else can help, love lifted me. Souls in danger, left above, the ashes completely stained. Even if she by his Lord, out of the angry rain, he's the master of the sea, knows his will, no pain. He is Savior, wants to be saved today.